Welcome to a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Scott Burton. It's Thursday, August 30th, 2018. On today's show, we'll hear about how to eat free ice cream with our elders. We'll learn more about the movie Irreparable Harm and how to watch it on demand for free. UAS librarians will talk information literacy and it's important in the era of fake news. And we'll get the details about Tai Chi for seniors. Those interviews, national native news, bird note music, and more right here, live and local on a Juno afternoon. It's currently 57 degrees with light rain here in the capital city.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. In Canada, a federal court has rejected the government's approval of the Trans Mountain Pipeline expansion project, the CBC reports, leaving it in limbo. The pipeline by U.S.-based Kinder Morgan would triple the amount of oil flowing from Alberta to the U.S. West Coast to be shipped by tanker overseas. Native groups in both the U.S. and Canada have been fighting the pipeline, but some First Nations approve it, seeing it as creating jobs and boosting the economy. Native people in Arizona were among those to visit the Arizona State Capitol Wednesday to pay respect to U.S. Senator John McCain, who died last weekend after battling cancer. Tribal leaders are expected to be among those in attendance at a memorial service Thursday in Phoenix among federal, state, and local officials. McCain is being remembered as a pioneer in Indian gaming and for his years-long work on Indian country issues. Among pallbearers is U.S. District Court Judge Diane Humitiwa, who's Hopi, and a former U.S. attorney. In 2014, McCain nominated her to serve as a federal judge. After her confirmation, Humitiwa made history, becoming the first Native American woman on the federal bench. Healthcare can be hard to access in rural communities and even more difficult when facilities are not tailored to a community's specific needs, especially among tribes. Wyoming Public Radio's Taylor Stagner has more.
A recently published paper argues that more self-determination and frank discussions about structural racism could help improve access to healthcare for Indigenous populations. Marshall Chin is a co-author on the paper and an expert in healthcare disparities at the University of Chicago Medicine.
It's important for us to have honest discussions as a country about history, about colonialism, about why we're in the situation now where tribes have significant health challenges and economic challenges.
Comparing 11 Western countries, the Commonwealth Fund found in 2017 that New Zealand ranked 8th, while the United States ranked 11th in health equity. Co-author and Maori tribal member from the Ngati Kahungunu Iwi, Brian Jones, says that health disparities are greatly reduced if Indigenous communities are given more control over their healthcare systems.
The more authentically Indigenous communities were afforded the ability to determine how services were run, the more successful those initiatives were.
Jones says the people making the decisions about Indigenous healthcare are often not Indigenous themselves, and that the decision makers can sometimes be out of touch with the day-to-day needs of Indigenous communities.
We do find ourselves in a situation where we're often making decisions which work really well for our dominant culture, for our white culture. Those decisions are generally made by often doctors making decisions that work really well for their people, and those decisions fail Indigenous population groups.
Both Chin and Jones hope the paper sheds light on the issue of healthcare inequity for Indigenous people around the globe. For National Native News, I'm Taylor Stagner in Laramie.
A celebration of Native American and Hispanic culture in Santa Fe, New Mexico, will aim to reconcile relations after the recent cancellation of a controversial reenactment of Spanish conquistadors taking over the city. Native people who protested the annual entrada said it highlighted genocide. The Associated Press reports under the new plan, Santa Fe will kick off celebrations next week, which will continue through Indigenous Peoples Day in October. Campgrounds in a world-renowned area at the bottom of the Grand Canyon are expected to reopen this weekend. The Havasupai tribe closed its campgrounds and declared a state of emergency in July after waves hit the community, causing damage and mud and rock slides. Recovery efforts from the flood are in the thousands of dollars. The tribe's primary source of revenue is from people who travel to the reservation to see its blue-green waterfalls. The tribe says repairs have been completed and the area is safe for visitors. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is by Odawi Law Group, provider of Indian Law Solutions, and by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite System.
For Native Americans affected by domestic violence, the Strong Hearts Native Helpline offers peer-to-peer support and resources. It's safe, confidential, and toll-free at 844-7-NATIVE. Program support by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center.
And by the law offices of Sanofsky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller, and Monkman, a national tribal rights law firm with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska, and online at sanofsky.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to a Juno afternoon here on Thursday, August 30th, 2018. Scott Burton, your host today. It's about 6 minutes past the hour. Joining me in the studio now is Marianne Mills. She is the program director for Southeast Senior Services, which, as you may know, is under the umbrella of Catholic Community Services. We also have Alan Akiyama. He is on the Juno Senior Center Advisory Council. Marianne and Alan, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us, Scott.
And did I describe your position correctly, Marianne?
Yes, thanks.
All right. Who should we start with? Alan, I know we're going to be talking about, among other things, the Ice Cream Social coming up this Monday. Is that right?
That's right, Scott. This Monday, Labor Day, September 3rd, we're going to have the Juno Senior Center second annual Back to School Ice Cream Social Fundraiser. It's going to be held at the Juno Senior Center, which is 12th and Egan Drive, right across the street from the Harborville Elementary School playground, from 2 to 4 p.m. And we're lucky again this year to have Mark Wheeler from COPA is going to be supplying the ice cream. He's going to have vanilla and, of course, his well-known rhubarb sherbet. Going to have lots of toppings for everyone to make their own sundaes if they want. Tickets are available at the door. Adults, $8. Children under 12, $5. And if you have a family of four, it's $25. And all the money that we raise on Monday goes to the Juno Senior Nutritionist Program, which does Meals on Wheels to shut-ins here in Juno, as well as the noonday meals at the Juno Senior Center 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, and also Tuesdays and Thursdays at the Douglas Methodist Church.
Okay. Wow. A lot going on there. Tell us more about sort of what you do. You mentioned Meals on Wheels, this nutrition program at the Juno Senior Center. This is part of your work with the Juno Senior Center Advisory Council, is that right?
Yes. Senior Center Advisory Council is a fundraising arm, all volunteers, and we hold different fundraisers throughout the year. We hold 2 pancake breakfast fundraisers on Sewers Day and Alaska Day, which is coming up on Thursday, October 18th, so circle that date on your calendars. We also do a raffle every fall with the proceeds, again, going to the Senior Nutritionist Program. So we try and raise money throughout the year so that we can keep all these programs going, the Meals on Wheels and the Noonday Meals.
Okay. Marianne Mills, Program Director of Southeast Senior Services, how do you fit into all of this?
Well, Southeast Senior Services operates 12 different senior centers throughout Southeast Alaska, with Yakutat farthest north, and then Kowak and Saxman in the south, and several in between. And the Juno and Douglas meal sites or senior centers are 2 of those 12 senior centers that we operate.
Okay.
Yeah, so all of those senior centers, they have meals around the noon hour for anybody age 60 and older. So for those people listening, if you're 60 and older and you've never been to the Juno or the Douglas Senior Center, please stop by. It's a delicious menu of all sorts of things, from tacos to meatballs, fish, and all barbecue chicken and all sorts of good stuff. So every day, Monday through Friday at noon at the Juno Senior Center, and like Alan said, Tuesday and Thursday at the Douglas Community United Methodist Church. You just have to be age 60 or older and come on by and have some fun, meet some new friends, or visit with longtime friends.
Remind us where that church is on Douglas.
Well, it's on Douglas Highway. It's, I think, the only church in Douglas proper.
Like halfway to downtown
it's,
Douglas.
It's across from the fire station, kind of.
Okay.
Before you turn left to go to the Island Pub.
Oh, okay. So it's right down there in downtown Douglas.
Yeah.
Oh, there. Okay. Got it. And that's Tuesday and Thursday there in Douglas?
Yeah.
Is that right?
At noon, yeah.
And that's free
the more the
lunch
merrier.
For 60 and
well,
over.
Well, it's based on a suggested donation, so people should pay, if they can, pay what they can toward
sure.
the cost of the meal. If they can't afford anything, then they don't have to pay anything. But our funding sources expect people to pay, you know, donate if they can.
Sure.
And to make, you know, to make the program solid and strong, we have we're dependent on grants and government funding, except for the wonderful fundraising that Alan
socials.
And his group does. So, and then the contributions from the people that benefit from the nutritious meals. They're, each meal is a hot, complete meal. You know, you've got the salad, the main dish, hot vegetable and bread source. And we offer, you know, other things as well. So it's really good. It's really a good deal, and we encourage people to come by.
All right. So the ice cream social on Monday is taking place at the Senior Center here in the Federal Flats on 12th Street, across the street from Harborview Elementary, right there?
That's correct.
What days a week, again, are lunches provided there, Alan?
It's Monday through Friday. They start serving at 11:45, a quarter noon. Usually lunch is done by 12:30. And you're welcome to always stay around afterwards and visit with your friends or your family that you meet there. As Marianne says, free well donation, but we ask for those 60 and older, $5 per meal. And if they're 60 and under, you can still come. We just ask for a free well donation of $10.
And actually, if they're under 60, they have to pay at least $10. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's for people over 60.
Sure.
Yeah, and so we don't charge people that are age 60 and older, but we charge people that are under 60. Yeah.
And often are these meals that are made, say, at the downtown senior center, the Juno Senior Center, are those then the meals that go out with Meals on Wheels?
Exactly. They prepare the meals all at the same time in the kitchen at the Juno Senior Center, and we have a wonderful group of volunteers that deliver the meals every day, 5 days a week, to shut-ins. Right now, I think we deliver between 70 and 100 meals every day to shut-ins. And it serves not only as some people, their hot, nutritious meal a day, but also serves as a well check for the elderly that are shut-in. We're always looking for volunteers for more Meals on Wheels delivery drivers, too.
Okay. This sounds like a good deal. Again, we're talking about the second annual Ice Cream Social this Monday, September 3rd. It's at the Juno Senior Center from 2 to 4 p.m. COPA is donating ice cream, and it's going to be benefiting everything here that we're talking about. I imagine that at these lunches, it's also a time to socialize.
Exactly. Yes. In fact, some people have friends that they get together with on a certain day every week. They meet down at the senior center for lunch and to visit. And some people come every day just to come and have a good hot meal. It's a hot, nutritious meal that's served. And so it's wonderful to get together with your friends and family and share good times.
Which one's your favorite, Alan?
My favorite is the Juno Senior Center's Thanksgiving meal.
Mm.
Every year, the week before Thanksgiving, they prepare a Thanksgiving meal with all the trimmings. And usually there's not an empty chair that day because everyone throughout the community comes to share the good times and a good Thanksgiving meal before Thanksgiving.
How about you, Marianne? Which is your favorite?
Oh, gosh. I love them all. They're all great.
All right. So be sure to meet these folks and a number of others on Monday, September 3rd, this Labor Day, from 2 to 4 at the Juneau Senior Center here on 895 West 12th Street. What else is going on? What's on your calendar? You mentioned some pancake breakfast?
Yes. Upcoming in October is our Alaska Day Pancake Breakfast fundraiser. I believe it's on Thursday, October 18th. We do it every Thursday, Alaska Day. So we have pancakes, eggs, bacon, ham, some fresh fruit, juice, coffee. Wonderful day to way to start off your Alaska Day. And also, again, we'll be selling raffle tickets in the shopping centers this fall and winter to raise money benefit the Senior Nutritionist Program. And the drawing for that will be held the second Friday in December. So look for us in the stores.
Okay. You all mentioned volunteers for Meals on Wheels, so you're definitely looking for those.
Yes, please. We depend on our volunteers to deliver all the meals to the seniors that aren't able to come to the Senior Center for lunch. And so if you're listening, and you could call Charlene at 463-6179. Thanks. And Charlene's a volunteer coordinator, and she's always looking for good volunteers. And a volunteer can either take one route, you know, one day a week, or they can be a substitute for when people who have regular routes go on vacation. So there's room for everybody. And sometimes it just takes an hour and a half over the lunch hour. So even working people can be Meals on Wheels delivery volunteers.
You probably need a working car, a driver's license. And
probably, yeah.
Probably a
and
little.
You have to pass a background check, too.
Okay, okay.
Because these are vulnerable adults that are living in their homes, most of them alone.
Do they usually enjoy visiting when you drop off the lunch, or do they just
yes. In fact, the volunteers develop relationships with them, and if, the say, one of the seniors goes in the hospital, they worry about them. They say, what happened to Mrs. Smith, or what's going on? You know, they just, and, of course, the seniors just really look forward to the volunteers coming to visit them. So like Alan said, it's a safety check. It's a friendly smile of, you know, a friendly voice, somebody to talk to, and it's a hot, nutritious meal, which is key to helping older people maintain their health and independent living for as long as possible.
Again, call Charlene if you're interested in volunteering for Meals on Wheels at 463-6179. Any other volunteer needs in the senior center community?
Well, we're always looking for people to volunteer to lead activities at the Senior Center. You know, Senior Centers are not just a place where you can come get a hot, nutritious meal, but all sorts of fun activities like card games, and we have a full ceramics program there, and all sorts of things going on. So if you have an activity that you'd like to offer, you can call the manager, Renee Hughes, at 463-6175. And she's always looking for some more fun activities to add to the variety of things going on there at the Senior Center.
Okay. In the meantime, meet these folks, Marianne Mills and Alan Akiyama, at the annual Ice Cream Social this Monday, September 3rd, 2018, 2 to 4 p.m. the afternoon there on Monday. Ice Cream by Copa. And all of these funds that are raised on Monday go to support everything we've been talking about, feeding senior citizens. Thanks for coming on the show, Marianne. And Alan, are we missing anything? Anything you'd like to add?
No. Thank you very much, Juno, for your continual support of the Senior Nutritionist Program. We hope to see a lot of you there on Monday from 2 to 4.
Thanks again.
Thanks, you too.
Click by your house. past about 2:45 with the sidewalk Sunday strawberry surprise. I got a cherry popsicle, I'm right on time. I got a big stick, mama, that'll blow your mind. 'Cause I'm your ice cream man, and I'm a one-man band. And I'm your ice cream man, baby, I'll be good to you.
Classic presents Juno favorite Zool Bailey and Friends in a special evening for four cellos at the Jack, September 2nd. Favorites by Bach, Bruch, Couperin, and Schumann, and a vintage mix of classics and rock by contemporary composer and cellist Patrick Laird. Tickets at Hearthside, the Jack, or jazzandclassics.org. Celebrate the Labor Day weekend, Sunday, September 2nd at 7, Zool and his friends, and cello times 4.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Thursday, August 30th. Scott Burton, your host today. It's about 23 minutes past the hour. My guest now is Bryn Foolhardy. She is the communications coordinator over at Southeast Alaska Conservation Council. And we're here to talk about the film Irreparable Harm, which we've talked about on the show before, but it's taking a new form, sort of on demand and for free on the web. Is that right, Bryn?
That's correct. Thanks for having me.
It's nice to have you here.
So it's now available through Vimeo and on our website. So if you go to www.seacc.org, you can pick up the entire film. It's about 20 minutes.
And if somebody hasn't seen it, how would you describe it?
It's a wonderful film based off of a lot of our work over on Admiralty Island, both in the community of Angoon and then up north in Hawk Inlet. And so it talks both about the importance of marine foods to the community of Angoon and then the work that we've done with both Michelle Ridgway and then Friends of Admiralty Island to really dig into some of the issues in Hawk Inlet and see if there has been an impact from mining on the organisms in the waters up there.
Great. And did SEAC have a relationship with the making of the film?
Yeah, we worked really closely with both of the filmmakers from Wild Confluence and Vote of Earth. They were great guys to work with. They came up here a couple of times and got some really amazing shots of the area.
Okay. I have the trailer pulled up here. Maybe we could give a listen. I know it's funny to listen to a trailer on the radio, but it's pretty dialogue rich. So hopefully this will give you listeners an idea of what the film might be like. And let me stop the music. There we go.
Tlingit people have called Southeast Alaska home for over 10,000 years and continue to thrive along the coast of the Inside Passage, a rugged maze of islands and fjords hundreds of miles long.
I'm not poor. I may not have any money. This is rich. This is our way of life, my way of life.
I'm going to speak for Angoon, my home. One of the greatest fears we have is having to move away because we can no longer eat what we've been eating for centuries.
We have the ability to lease monument lands to support mining activities as long as we are not causing irreparable harm to the monument and the monument values.
You know, mining in a rainforest is just a whole nother ballgame.
I've had quite a few sleepless nights looking into this.
I'm seeing the metals in the ore body at Greens Creek reflected in the animals.
This isn't a little thing. Promises are being broken. Lies are being said.
Can you hear it? Can you hear the earth crying?
Land that lived here for thousands of years created a culture based on balance and harmony, not on exploitation and control. We need to learn from that.
If you're just tuning in, we were listening to the trailer for the film Irreparable Harm, and in the studio with me here on a Juno afternoon is Bryn Fluharty, and she is the communications coordinator over at Southeast Alaska Conservation Corps. When you listen to that trailer, what are some of your favorite parts of that film or that project?
Really, one of the things I love is just the science that we've been doing over there. And so our staff scientist, Sky Archibald, has spent a considerable amount of time on the island really digging into these issues and being able to be a voice for really people throughout Southeast, because this is a really critical issue. One of the things is that Greens Creek is held up as a really great example of a mine that can be that can meet environmental standards as well as be economically viable. And what we're finding is that there is concern that they might actually be causing harm to the inlet. And so it's really critical for all of our work at SEAC that we actually understand what's been going on and what we can subsequently do if there has been harm done, what we can do to both improve active mines and then any proposed mines that we have both here in Alaska as well as in BC, because those are also mines that would impact our water quality here in Southeast.
Okay. Where is this going to be? Where can people go to see this again? Can you give us the website?
So it's on our website. It's seacc.org, so that's seac.org. And then it's you can go to the irreparable harm section from there.
And it's you can watch it for free anytime you like?
Yep, anytime you want. And you can also sign our petition on our website conveniently. It's asking the Forest Service to redo the 1979 to 1980 baseline study, which is something that would be instrumental in helping us understand what the change has been in water quality in the inlet, as well as we're pushing for them to make Hawk Inlet a living laboratory so that we can actually use it for improving our understanding both as a community as well as bringing in people from maybe even around the world, to study and have a really great understanding of what's been going on.
Okay. Anything else on your guys' calendar or radar, Bryn?
We've got a bunch of stuff coming up, especially here in Southeast. We'll be doing a couple of potlucks here in Juneau in the coming months. We don't have anything set on the calendar right now, but we're super excited for a pretty active winter. And so people can check out our Facebook page, SEAC, which is Southeast Alaska Conservation Council, and then also on our website, SEAC.org.
All right, that's Bryn Fluharty. She is the communications coordinator over at Southeast Alaska Conservation Council. Bryn, thanks for coming on the show. Find irreparable harm at SEAC.org. Bryn, anything else that you'd like to add?
Nope, just thank you very much for having me.
Mm-hmm.
This is Bird Note. At the close of a summer day, the songbirds go silent. Aviri's final notes reverberate in near darkness. And, as if on cue, the true birds of the night now make their voices known. In an eastern woodland, the eerie trills and whinnies of an eastern screech owl are among the first sounds of the night. An eastern screech owl is petite, standing just under 9 inches tall. Mates trill to one another during courtship, and whinny to defend territory. When night falls west of the Rockies, a different pair of small owls combine voices, hooting a rhythmic duet. These night singers, western screech owls, are found in low-elevation woodlands and deserts. But there's another bird whose voice will drown out the loudest of screech owls. These are the rhythmic hoots of a barred owl, a large, stocky bird of forests, swamps, and suburban parks. Pairs may break into a rollicking duet, sometimes called their monkey call. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
Hi, my name is Joe Davis Fleming, Executive Director for the Juneau Symphony. Join us on September 1st for our annual benefit wildlife and wine tasting cruise. Enjoy live music, wine, and hors d'oeuvres aboard an Alamarine catamaran and the opportunity of spectacular wildlife sightseeing with naturalist Mary Wilson. For more information and tickets, go to JuneauSymphony.org. Tickets are also available at the Jack, Hartside Books, and the Juneau Symphony office.
You're listening to a Juno afternoon here on Thursday, August 30th, 2018. We're close to the bottom of the hour. Scott Burton, your host today. And joining me now in the studio is Kaya Henriksen. She's the Information Literacy Librarian out at the UAS Library. And also Jennifer Ward, who's the Outreach Services Librarian out there in Ok Bay. Welcome to the show, you two.
Thanks. Thank you.
Nice to have you here. Kaya, should we start with you? You want to talk about what's going on out there?
Sure. So basically, information literacy is just a new way of saying the ability to think critically about information. So being able to choose information wisely, evaluate it, use it effectively. And it's especially important in our modern world. You know, in the old days, there were pretty much, you were limited to print sources for the most part, and information was housed in places like libraries, and it wasn't necessarily just out there all over as it is now. So much is available online and through other resources through the internet, and in a way, with so much information, it becomes much harder to find what you really need and make sure that it's quality. And I think especially these days, with all of the talk in the news about fake news or biased news, that having those skills to be able to really determine the legitimacy of what you're reading and viewing and making sense of that, and being a savvy knowledge consumer is so important. And so
knowledge consumer, I like that. So what are some resources that you may have out there that our listeners right now, if they wanted to come out to you and become better knowledge consumers, what might they be able to do with you?
Well, I do actually teach a one-credit class that's open to UAS students and the community on information literacy. And we have one section that meets on campus and one that's online. So if someone can't come out to campus during the day, they could take the online class. And not only would they learn information literacy skills, but also some navigating online class skills, which is also an important skill to have, especially here in Alaska, where you know, the ability to take classes from other places is important. And those classes are still open. They're short classes since they're just one credit, so they don't start until September 11th. So it's still available if anyone wants to register. I also, in my role out at the library, work at the reference desk. So if people have information needs, they can come out, and any of the librarians who work at the reference desk can help community members and students and staff to find credible information, to do research, to use the resources that we have. The university has a great print collection, but we also have materials available online, articles, newspapers, and a lot of other resources that people in the community can access.
All right, Kai, I'd like to come back to you in just a second. I want to ask a few practical examples for searching for non-fake news. In the meantime, Jennifer Ward, you're the Outreach Services Librarian. You know, when I think about the Egan Library, is that where both of you spend most of your time?
Yes.
Out there? Just a gorgeous space.
Absolutely, and I'm so glad you said that, because that's one of the things I wanted to talk about is, you know, it's the most beautiful building on our campus, and right now it's really abuzz with activity because new students are here on campus, and they're trying to find out where their classes are, and they're getting assignments, and they're coming to our reference desk and asking us questions. And it's abuzz with students, but we always welcome the community as well. And it, you know, you can come in and read a book or do some studying or use our Wi-Fi, come in and take a class at the university. I also wanted to say that it's we have a really beautiful collection of Northwest Coast art in the building, and just to see all the examples of that is really something I recommend.
And if somebody hasn't been there before, how would you describe the space? You know, there's these multi-levels and natural light.
Yeah, it's open. It's, what is the type of architecture? Post and beam, maybe?
Sounds about right.
And it was interesting. We have some skylights, and usually in Juneau, that's just fine. It's gray. There's rain up there. It's kind of filtered light, but this summer, being so sunny, we had lots of sunbeams coming in, and it's the campus is on Auk Lake, and we can partly see Auk Lake from the Egan Library building. We see wildlife. There's berries around us in the bushes, so it's really a beautiful space.
And occasionally, aren't there evening at Egan lectures and other lectures take place down sort of on the main floor? Are we going to talk about those today? Or
yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. We were going to talk about a few of the events that happen at the Egan Library. So there is an evening at Egan series over the fall, and they happen on every Friday, is it?
I believe so, just about.
Yeah. Yeah, some of the topics that are coming up on September 7th is the National Climate Assessment, the Science in Alaska. One of the professors the following week is going to be talking about skiing and climbing and philosophy. And I just recommend people go to the university site and check out the schedule for the evening at Egan lecture series, because it's fabulous.
Yeah, and I've been working with Kenny Campbell, and I think just about all of these guests will be appearing on the show as well right before their lectures. So that's
perfect.
Always an enjoyment here. Okay. Kaya, back to you for a second. What is one sort of piece of practical knowledge you might be able to share with our listeners about finding real news or real information, I guess?
Well, in terms of news, I think one important thing is to try to get your news from a variety of trusted news reporting sites. So KTOL, for example, we would recommend as a source for good local news. And major newspapers and places. And if you get a lot of your news from social media, one of the most important things that you can do before forwarding it on to others is to actually just click on the link and read the article and see if it seems legitimate. A lot of times that immediately will bring to your attention that something is perhaps not correct, or you read it and realize it's not what the headline in your Facebook feed says it is. Using those sources like Snopes or PolitiFact to check for hoaxes. If something really makes you emotional and you think, oh my gosh, I can't believe this, it's probably not 100% true. So it's a good idea to just take a step back, do some checking, read the article, check the sources the article uses, do a little research on the company that published the article before you really just find yourself believing it.
That's interesting. So you're putting the onus on social media users before they distribute news to actually vet it themselves.
Well,
in a sense, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if it comes from a source that you really have a lot of trust in, maybe that's not necessary, but I think that there's so much out there and there's the potential for it to not be true, and that you should take that extra step to check and see, is this legitimate? I mean, even just checking and reading it. I think a lot of times people just look at whatever shows up in their feed with the little caption, and that's as far as it goes. Mm. So,
interesting. And what were the two sites you mentioned that could help people verify news?
PolitiFact is a good source for especially for news stories involving politics. And then Snopes.com is great for those kind of hoax, especially, or if you want to see sometimes you'll find a meme that's got incorrect information in it, you can just search it in Snopes and it'll come up. And both of those organizations have been around for a long time, and they're very practiced at fact-checking.
Okay. That's the voice of Kaya Henriksen. She is the information literacy librarian out at UAS. She's teaching a one-credit class on everything we're talking about, how to be a good knowledge consumer, avoid fake news, getting good information out at UAS. You can also meet her at the library itself, at the reference desk. Is that right?
Yes.
Sometimes?
I'm not always at the reference desk, but I am usually somewhere in the library or on campus. I also go into classrooms to support student research as a part of my position as well.
I occasionally teach writing out there, and I've worked with some of your colleagues, and those classes and those instructions are awesome. You have all these Jedi tricks for searching for information, embedding information. I really enjoy that. Jennifer Ward, anything else on your calendar coming up soon, or anything you want to share with the reader or listeners?
Absolutely. So two things is I want people to be aware of the Friends of the Egan Library Network. It's a section of the Friends and Alumni Association of the university, and that's a way to stay connected and support the Egan Library. So that is a way that you can be a member, and that's $15 a year or $200 for a lifetime membership alongside of your alumni association membership. And, yeah, we have lots of events coming up, including the One Campus, One Book.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, this year we're pretty excited. It's the name of the book. This is a One Campus, One Book. So many students and faculty members and staff and community members, if you'd like, are all commonly reading this one book. This year it was chosen. They're always chosen by committee, including students and a wide range of people at the university. The book is called Spare Parts, Four Undocumented Teenagers, One Ugly Robot, and The Battle for the American Dream by Joshua Davis.
Sounds like a great choice. I wish we had time to talk about that today, but I'd like to talk to you or Jonas or Kenny and let's spend a lot of time with that book and share it with the community. And
awesome.
It'd be fun to get as many of us reading it as possible. right? If people want more information about the library itself or what's coming up, where's the best place to find that?
They can go to our website, www.uas.alaska.edu/library.
Sounds good. And do you have a Facebook page, too, for the library? Or?
We do.
Okay.
We also have a chat on our website, so if you just want to quickly zap us a question, we're chatting with you all the time.
Great. That's the voice of Jennifer Ward, and we've also been speaking with Kaya Henriksen. They are librarians at UAS. You can find them on Facebook or the web, or go see them at the reference desk. It was nice talking to you, too. Anything else you'd like to add?
No, thanks.
No, thanks.
All right. Thanks, you, too.
Bye-bye.
To a Juno afternoon here on Thursday, August 30th, about 13 minutes till the top of the hour. My guest now is Eileen Hosey. She is the Tai Chi coordinator for Southeast Senior Services. Eileen, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's very nice to be here.
All right. So Tai Chi classes for seniors. When can we get into one?
Our next class starts September 11th. It's going to run Tuesdays and Thursdays for 8 weeks. Class is going to be 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. downtown at the Filipino Community Hall. Classes will be taught by Josie Lynn Ferrer, one of our wonderful certified Tai Chi instructors. Her classes are really popular. I've had we usually have about 20 students. I'm up to about 8 now, so get your applications in soon, folks.
You said 5:30 to 6?
1 hour.
Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Mm-hmm, for 8 weeks.
Okay, at the Filipino Community Center downtown.
Yes, downtown, right.
And what age does a senior mean?
Age 60 and above.
Okay.
Or if you're a caregiver of someone who's 60 or above, you would be able to do it also. Because one of the side benefits of Tai Chi is relaxation, meditation, core body strengthening, and general overall better balance. So that's what we like to see. Just as an aside, September is National Falls Prevention Month, and falls for seniors are particularly serious. Falls are responsible for more than half of fatal head injuries. So we like to keep that in mind because Tai Chi can help you build your core body strength. It will help with your balance. It will help with your overall sense of well-being.
Absolutely. What is the cost for this 8-week course?
It is free. We have a grant through the state of Alaska. So no charge.
If one of our listeners out there has never seen Tai Chi or heard your description before, how might you describe it to them?
I would describe it as a series of gentle body movements, or what we would call poses. One movement flows into the next. You will be shown how to hold your feet, how to align your body, and then you will go into a series of gentle movements. The first few classes, you do the basics, and then you will learn. Each time you go to class, you'll learn a new set of movements that will continue until you're done with your 8 weeks. And as you go along, you'll become more confident in your posture. And when you're out walking on some of the uneven streets around town, you'll have better balance.
Remind me of the instructor's name.
Josie Lynn Ferrer.
Do you happen to know if she does courses for middle-aged people as well?
I believe she does.
Okay, I'll have to look
her up. How does one define middle age?
Good question. I don't know. Me.
I know that old age is always 10 years older than we are, so middle age might be 10 years younger. I don't know.
Guess it's however you feel, right?
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
Eileen Hosey, thanks for coming on the show. If somebody wants to sign up, it sounds like you have at least 10 more spots.
Yep.
What's the number to call?
463-6113. You can also email me at Eileen, E-I-L-E-E-N dot Hosey, H-O-S-E-Y, at ccsjuno.org. I can email you the registration packet. You can fill it out and email it back and then show up the first night of class.
Okay, so again, that's 463-6113.
That's correct.
Or email Eileen, E-I-L-E-E-N. Hosey, H-O-S-E-Y, at ccs.juno.
Nope, ccsjuno.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
ccsjuno.org.
Perfect.
Eileen, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you, Scott.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You're listening to A Juno Afternoon. We have about 8 minutes to go here on this Thursday. It's time for Arts Up with Nancy DeCherney of the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. Nancy, nice to have you here. How's this weekend looking?
Well, you know, it's a holiday weekend. Isn't that exciting?
3-day weekend for a lot of people.
For a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Not all people. But, well, this evening, 6:30 to 8 p.m. at the Jack is Blueprint Downtown Public Meeting. Did you have people
we
on?
We did yesterday, yeah.
Oh, okay. Absolutely. Well, this is like a comprehensive plan for the neighborhood from the Rock Dump to Norway Point. Just come with your ideas. They got big tables set up in there and different topics, and you can talk about what your dreams and visions for.
Help sculpt our future
communities. Come up with some
great
ideas.
What time tonight?
6:30 to 8 p.m. It's at the Jack, and it's free, so
All right. Come
on down. It's election season, so there's a lot of election-type things going on. Tomorrow from 8 until 6, that seems like a lot of time, from 8 in the morning till 6:30 p.m. We better check that. Meet the candidates at the Diamond Park Fieldhouse. Juno parents of young children, meet your candidates. There's a free Friday fun night with pizza, fruit, and door prizes, and all things to play with while your parents are talking to the adults.
Yeah, they were on the show yesterday, too.
Cool.
That sounded about right.
Yeah. There is 8 p.m. as at the Alaska Fish and Chips Company. They have live music, and this week features Jizzle Fizzle.
Mm-hmm.
That is. Right?
We had them on the show last week.
Oh,
kind
my
of a
gosh,
jam
I'm
band.
Everything is so last week around here.
Rob Weber, or Rob Montoya and Company, jam band, Ryan Cortez.
Sounds fun.
Yeah.
And that, you just go on down there and have a good time. Saturday at 9 a.m., a fun run and walk for the Juno Family Health and Birth Center. You can show your support for them. It's a fundraiser. There's a 5K run up Salmon Creek Hill to the powerhouse and back. All proceeds benefit the birth center. You can get more information about these things and all the other things on our website, which is jahc.org or ktoo.org, and get all the details on stuff. There is an Inside Passage DAR meeting and flag retirement at the Douglas Public Library. The ceremony being done by the Girl Scout troop. Community members are invited to attend. And this is from 1 to 3 over in Douglas. The Juno Symphony Wildlife Cruise. Oh, that sounded like fun, but I forgot to get tickets and now it's sold out. Okay, sorry. You gotta snooze, you lose, you know. But anyway, there you have it. There's a Harry Potter thing you could be going to, though, from 2 to 4 at the Mendenhall Public Library. Celebrate 20 years. Can you believe it? 20 years of Harry Potter in the U.S. Join the public library and actors from Perseverance Theater in a magical tribute. They'll be reading it.
And this is Saturday still, right?
Mm-hmm. And it's at the Mendenhall Public Library. From 7 to 10 p.m., a summer shakedown at Pier 49 with Harrison B. and the Shiver Twins. Doors open at 7. Tickets are online. At 7 p.m. on Sunday, it's the Juno Jazz and Classics Labor Day concert with Zool Bailey and other cellists. It's going to be beautiful. It's a fundraiser for the Jazz and Classics Festival, and tickets are still available for that. On Monday from 2 to 4, there's an ice cream social at the Juno Senior Center. This is to support the Juno Senior Nutrition Program and Meals on Wheels. So eat ice cream for Meals on Wheels. A better thing I can't think of to do. So it's on Monday from 2 to 4. On Tuesday from 5 to 6, sit down with Sarah Lynn at Sacred Grounds. You can visit with her. There's beginning karate classes from 6 to 6:30 at La Perouse Avenue out by the airport dike. So you can begin your basic karate stances. They will also be happening on Wednesday, it looks like. So it's kind of a full week, but it's also Labor Day weekend. So just go out and have a nice end of summer wrap up the party type thing.
Absolutely. And where can we find all that information in digital form, Nancy?
JAHC.org or KTOO.org. And if you'd like to have it emailed to you, you can send us an email and we do send a PDF of this out to you.
And who should they write to
Nancy,
get that? Nancy.
J-A-H-C.org.
Wow, write to the executive director?
Well, you know.
It's a nonprofit, right?
It's a nonprofit, yeah.
Nancy at jahc.org to get this list, or go to ktoo.org or jahc.org to see it.
So many things.
So many options. Nancy,
yes, thank
Cicerni,
you.
Thank you, and thanks for compiling that list for us.
Talk to you next week.
Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon. It's currently 57 degrees with light rain here in the capital city. The forecast for tonight calls for periods of rain, lows around 50, and a southeast wind from 10 to 15 miles per hour. Chance of precip 100% tonight. Tomorrow, rain likely before 7 a.m., then showers mainly after 7, and a high near around 56. Saturday, a 50% chance of rain. Sunday, 50% chance of rain. And then Labor Day, just a chance of rain with partly sunny skies. Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon.